Well, we have to determine what we're doing with all the gear we have in the theater, how we're handling that. We have to do typical things that you have to do to close up any business. You have to finish all the bookkeeping records, the accounting. There'll be taxes to be filed. And then there's a lot of sorting through stuff that we've hung on to. We have a pretty extensive archives of all the shows we've done. And we have, lots of old scripts. We have bunches of old programs and playbills and posters. And then the practical stuff, the tools, the chairs, the seating platform, stage, lights, cables, sound equipment, and all of the above. And then some. So we have to figure out all the details of what's happening with them.
Who to give it to, what to do with it, all that fun
That's
stuff.
Yeah. Part of it is simply that...
I'm just going to let you two do that, okay. Actually. That'll be more comfortable for you.
Sure. Part of it has to do with the direction that the City of Akron and the Convention and Visitors Bureau wants to take with that space. It's conceivable that they would find another theater company that would want to come in, and we would just leave everything as is, and they would have a working theater day one. Alternatively, they may want to come up with a very different use for the space, in which case our job is to essentially return it to the state that it was in when we moved in 2010. And that would largely mean pulling up the stage, taking down the lighting towers, those kinds of things. And we have, fortunately at this point, we have manpower to do that, should that be their choice. Both the city and the Convention and Visitors Bureau had indicated some interest in possibly finding another organization to step in, but obviously that's got to be their choice, their decision. But we are waiting to hear from them in terms of getting their direction in terms of how they want us to proceed.
So there could be a chance that the programs and scripts get donated to the university and the cables and amplifiers stay for a new tenant.
That's exactly
Absolutely.
Right. We haven't, we've just begun doing some of the research on what would be an appropriate repository for the archives. We've got 17 years of material, and so we're still looking into that. But that's a relatively simple task compared to how does one dispose of 80-some lighting instruments and dimmer systems and all of those other things.
140 chairs and, four restaurant tables and two restaurant booths. we've probably done 6 or 7 shows with an almost full 1950s or 1960s restaurant. Yeah, so the stuff you acquire, and it's pretty amazing. I made a joke when you came in that pretty much everything in our house has been on the stage at one point or another. And that's in the finest tradition of professional theater. When Arthur Miller originally produced The Price, he brought all of his furniture from his New York apartment. And there are several pictures available where you can see Arthur Miller's furniture on the original Price set. Yeah, so it's good theater tradition.
Absolutely, absolutely.
That's for sure.
So you don't have to give back everything in the house, though.
Right?
Our stuff is
kidding.
We loan.
But it is kind of funny because frequently we forget to peel off the glow tape. Yes, so at night, if we have to walk through the house, oh, look, there's a little glow tape everywhere.
Works out nicely. Yes.
It's very handy.
So as far as the production, there's
141.
Okay.
And that's just the main stage stuff. We did 8 or 9 children's shows. We did a couple dozen cabaret shows. We've done event shows that were for specific organizations or specific events. So, but the number we stay at is 141, pretty much.
All right. So what are the ones, for either of you, that will, or just memories in general, that will really stick in your memory, for better or for worse?
I still have chills even when I think about the production of that we did of Woody Guthrie's
material. Woody Guthrie's
American Song.
American Song, and it's just an absolutely wonderful piece of Americana, a great piece of history, and we had a spectacular cast, and it was one of those shows where just, you know, kind of everything worked, and that, so that was a real strong positive memory for me.
Of course, the first one, getting the very first show open, The Price. Mine tend to be favorites that Neil's been in, which would be Clarence Darrow and Bully, Teddy Roosevelt one. And the Scottish play that a lot of people use that term, I'll just say it, Macbeth. And that was a tremendous effort because we had so many actors in such a small space. That and Merry Wives of Windsor with Dorothy and Reuben Silver. Yes, which was fabulous. And
I was always pointed to the fact, with some pride, that the only opportunity that Reuben ever had to play Falstaff was at our theater. Anybody looking at Reuben would think, you know, this has been his stock in trade, but he only did it once, and he did it with us, and we were very, very proud of that production, and to have had a chance to work with he and Dorothy. We've just had a chance to work with you know, some amazingly talented people from all across Northeast Ohio, and that's really been the most satisfying part of it. You know, staying up late rewriting press release copy and reformatting the punctuation in the playbill. Those are not the things that you remember, but you know, being in rehearsal and feeling a show really coming together, working over and over and over on something, and then all of a sudden it's there, you know, and it's that satisfaction of the creative process, and that's really what we started the theater to do, and it's what still is what was most satisfying about the process.
We did a fabulous production of Oedipus Rex, and I don't think anybody else has touched that show before or after. We've done it in Cleveland, but it was a wonderful production with Wayne Turney. In the lead, we did masks for it. That was terrific. And of course, it was fabulous every time we had an opportunity to have one of our own kids or their spouses involved as an actor, a director, a stage manager. The first show that Connie directed at our theater was thrilling. The Sasha, Peter directed as well as acted. Keith, of course, has been in many shows. And each of those has been really kind of exciting. We did do a couple of things that, as parents, probably were a little iffy. We scheduled a production that Peter was in during his wedding, and so he got married on Saturday, and on Sunday at a matinee of a holiday show with us. And then the other was the summer Connie and Keith got married. He came back from his honeymoon, set to do about a 4-week run of I Love You, Perfect Now Change. And we called up Connie and said, we're keeping Keith here for another 3 weeks, maybe four, because the show's so popular, we're extending it. Yeah, so that was fun. That was very much fun.
And there are people in shows that, you know, we've done this past season who have been with us on stage since 1999. I mean, there are people who... Keith was with us from the beginning, Frank Jackman, Sally Groth, there are just this, Dana Hart, people who have been with us from the very beginning and have just stayed with us, and that sense of family that develops, and the fact that, you know, folks have the patience to continue to work with you, you know, even after all of the moments of stress. But it's the creative process. As long as we keep focused on serving the art, everything else falls in place.
Is that how you two manage to work together for so long without driving each other crazy?
Oh, we drive each other crazy. So let's just assume that, get past it.
I think part of it is that Mary Jo and I have worked with a couple of relatively short stints. We've always worked together, either at the same college or the same theater or the same business. We've always worked together. So apart from a couple of years when I was working on my doctorate and a couple of years when I was working for a manufacturing concern, Mary Jo and I literally have worked together all day, every day. So
we still talk to each other once in a while.
Yeah, but it is funny because I will have to occasionally send her an email, because otherwise I'll forget, because I'll be involved in something else.
We really liked when email became very, very accessible, because it just, we do so many things that it's super easy to forget how to do something. And that it's similar to working with our company of actors. You develop a shorthand within the work. So I know that when we call Sally Groth and we've got a role for her, I know how well prepared she'll come, how she inhabits a role. Same with Frank. I know exactly what he's going to start off with and how hard he'll work to expand what he's brought to the table. And I can multiply that by several hundred actors who've just been fabulous to work with that way.
So since everyone has sort of a rhythm, the two of you and this right. stock, not stock company, but these folks that you right. come back to again and again, your family, with the decision to close down, was it just that there's no way to duplicate this without you at the core? And I'm not trying to say this to make you egotistical.
No, the decision was made by the board of trustees. You know, Mary Jo and I, even though we started the theater, we serve at the pleasure of the board. And the board president and Mary Jo had a long discussion about Mary Jo's announced retirement. And so it was simply put to the board, do you want to go out and hire another artistic director and continue operating with, you know, Mary Jo and I providing whatever support might be needed? Do we want to go out and does the board want to go out and find another theater group that wants to come in and take over as Actors Summit or as Actors Summit Plus, whatever? And the board simply looked at the amount of work it was going to take, the amount of fundraising it was going to take to get it done, and they said, you know, it's just not in the cards for us to do that. Let's go ahead, finish on a high note. The bills are all paid. Let's turn out the lights and go home.
And you made an interesting point, and I've not seen it reported anywhere right, either, right. that money was not was not the issue here.
No,
yeah. no it was not. We had not announced a new season. Had we done so, we would have had the cash flow from those. We have a couple of grants that are coming in late that are, you know, obviously applied to the previous season. But no, there were, all of our bills are paid. There was it, and one of the other things that I think Mary Jo and I are both proud of is that throughout its 17-year history, the theater never had to declare a financial emergency. You know, we saw that happen a number of times with Cleveland Ballet and even with Ohio Ballet, where, you know, if we don't get $150,000 by Tuesday at 5, we're going to close. We never did that. We also, you know, there were a lot of things we did not do that we would have liked to have been able to do. Well, we would have liked to do more original plays. We would have liked to have done shows with larger casts. We would have liked to have been able to pay our actors more. We would have liked to have been able to hire more equity actors.
Ancillary staff, maybe more musicians.
So there were a lot of things that we would have liked to have done, but we didn't feel we could do it and be fiscally responsible, that we had to create art within our means. Within the economics of our community and our personal life. And so we were really proud of the fact that we never had to go to bed at night worrying about the fact that by not paying a bill, somebody else was being shorted. And so that was a major accomplishment for us. We were very proud of that.
So it sounds like, and I don't have to tell you, that it was an exciting 17, 18 years. What made you want to embark on this journey back then?
Well, Neil and I met in the theater. We worked together in the theater. We worked for many and nearly all of the theaters in Northeast Ohio at one point or another by the time we started our theater. Neil had performed at Great Lakes. I had designed at Dobama. I've worked in design at Kent State. I've performed at Porthouse. Neil's performed at Ensemble. Neil ran Stan Hewitt Shakespeare, he ran Weathervane, he managed, it, the list is very, very long. And we had this kind of aha moment one day saying, I think there's a different way to do it. That combined with, we had seen so many of our friends who had been former members of the Cleveland Playhouse Rep Company. When the Rep closed in 85, we saw a lot of amazingly talented people be unemployed. I'm turning this over to Neil. I'm going to turn mine off.
Okay.
Sorry.
Yeah, it should do the same thing. Sorry.
There we go. Sorry about that. Love those phones.
Yeah, of course.
It's a love hate.
The biggest single concern, and this is one of those things that the theater was unique in this, in that our mission statement from day one, from before we mounted our first production or held our first auditions, is that our mission statement was that we would create professional theater using Ohio artists. Because one of the supreme ironies is that when we first started up in 1998, 1999, there were two major theater employers in the area, Great Lakes Theater Festival and the Cleveland Playhouse. And at that time, and for several years after it, their acting pool was only about 10-12% Ohio artists, local people. They were casting out of New York, casting out of Chicago, having casting agents in New York. We actually had one friend who actually flew to New York to audition to be in a show at the Cleveland Playhouse. And in some way, you know, the saying is that all politics are local. Well, to a certain extent, all arts are local. And so we set out to create a theater, and our promise to the local acting community was that we would not be auditioning in New York, we would not be auditioning in Chicago, in spite of the fact that we got some pretty heavy pressure from the union to do so. But our premise was that we are an Ohio theater company. We hire Ohio artists who pay taxes in Ohio, who raise their kids in Ohio, and that is part of what creates the art, that we have an incredible talent pool. And, you know, I've worked at the Playhouse when, I mean, in one production, there were only two of us who were local, and the rest were all out of New York. And the two of us who were local had been brought in to play the servants. We were not of a caliber, you know, to play one of the major roles. And, you know, and I can honestly say that the other people in that production were in no case head and shoulders better than anybody in the Cleveland market. I could have cast that play better than it was cast. The talent is here. It's just that it's kind of like the definition of an expert is somebody who lives more than 50 miles away. You know, that's kind of this. We used to have great laughs about when Carousel was around, that they would advertise their all New York acting company. And if you looked at their resumes and you talked to the actors, they had a mailbox in New York, and they had an answering service in New York, but many of them had never performed in New York. They were still New York actors because that's where they'd gotten hired out of, but that didn't mean that they had Broadway or even off-Broadway credits. So our commitment was that we were going to be using the people who from around here, who we know, we would get to know. You know, if you're going to do a pickup ensemble, every time you want to do a symphony orchestra, you're not going to become the Cleveland Orchestra. And by the same token, I think we were able to do better work by virtue of the fact that we had people that we would use over and over again, and who would then be on stage with people with whom they had worked in the past. And that's that community. That's what we were striving for.
And obviously, it's still in your blood because you're still going to be active in this area. Maybe you can talk a little bit about that.
Absolutely. Well, in the middle of July and August, I'm designing a show for Shakespeare at the Castle, which is a professional and university joint production with the university and
Mount Union.
With Mount Union University, and And then I will move on to other designer acting
From there you go to the Hall of Fame.
I am the makeup artist for the National Football Hall of Fame, so that's always a fun gig. But and it's guaranteed. Every year my brothers and brothers-in-law will text me. So and it's always a good thing. I know nothing about football, she said very quietly. But it's, you know, there's always projects. People do always need designers. And I have a skill set. I also taught last semester at the University of Mount Union. I taught costume design and designed the show there. So I do that in between. But our youngest daughter moved out of state. And that probably pushed me the teensiest bit closer. But there is a point to do all of this every minute of every day, and those days tended to be 16, 17, 18-hour days at certain times of the year, and we did do everything. Yes, we chose the plays, created the season, picked the actors, directed, designed, gathered props. We also cleaned the lobby, picked up after the artists, you know, because we felt they deserve a good place to showcase their work. And but we have been so fortunate to have so many fabulous artists. And I have often said, and don't misunderstand this, but I've often said if you can grow a LeBron in Akron, there are equivalent artists, musicians, painters, teachers like that. And some of those actors have appeared on our stage, which is very wonderful.
I will audition from time to time, and I audition with a group of people we call them the usual suspects. When the casting call goes out that they need people of a certain age, the same five guys and I show up. So it gives us a chance to catch up on grandchildren and stuff. I would like to direct again if it was the right project. I'm just so glad to not be spending the bulk of my week worrying about grant applications and trying to, you know, work up marketing plans and all of those things that had to get done as long as you're running a theater, but weren't necessarily particularly satisfying artistically. Mm-hmm. And so that's part of what I won't miss. But I hope somebody will want me to act again. And I hope perhaps I'll have an opportunity to direct, but I'm just so enjoying I love weeding my garden. Because after years and years of spending all of your day worrying about other people's egos and trying to make nice with people who, you know, have their own opinion. The fact that their opinion is wrong, you know, doesn't mean it's not their opinion.
Do you mean her?
No, not at all. Not at all. It's these other people I have to work with. But when you're out in the garden, there is no moral quandary about whether or not you can kill the weed. You don't have to debate it. You don't have to call a committee meeting. You don't have to consult with anybody. You kill the weed. That's very satisfying.
It's like that cartoon, kill the rabbit, kill the weed.
So that and just being able to, as when you arrived today, Fiona and I were out picking raspberries in the backyard, and that's
pretty cool.
It's nice having some time for that.
Mm-hmm.
So backing up 2-3 years, when right. We were both fully devoting, engaged,
right.
Walking through what a day would have been like, say, when you were in rehearsals for a new production.
And from my perspective, you know, I get into the office 9:30, may not seem too early, but in our world. And then I'd be working on bookkeeping, writing press releases, designing graphics, making contacts with our local grants officers, filing reports with our friends at the Ohio Arts Council, scheduling on-air spots for WKSU, writing copy, having Joe Gunderman record them for us, deciding on the advertising schedule, how many square inches in which newspaper, how often. All of those things that nobody, when they show up at the theater, realizes that that's what had to get done. If I was very fortunate, I might then be able to take an hour or two in the afternoon to prepare for rehearsal that evening, or to read over another set of scripts, trying to determine what we'd be doing on the next season. Or if I was in the show, trying to, you know, get out of the office so that I can go somewhere and work on my words, a task which gets to be longer and longer the older one gets. So, and then, you know, we would have our lunch at the theater. We'd have our dinner at the theater. We then start rehearsal at 6:30. That's going to go to 9:30 or 10. We, you know, turn out the lights, make sure we're the last ones out, and then come home and fix supper. So we would typically have our large, it's one reason for my girth, we would have our biggest meal of the day at like 11 o'clock at night. And that was, and then we'd get up and do it again. And we would go 4-5 months in a row without taking a day off. I mean, without not being at the theater. The actors obviously had days off, and technicians had days off, but that doesn't mean, because, you know, the cast of one show, great, they've rehearsed, they're now opening, they have 4 performances a week. Well, the next show is already in rehearsal. So the fact that they get 3 days off a week doesn't mean that we get 3 days off a week. And because our whole premise from the beginning was that we want what money is available to go to the artists. So Mary Jo and I chose to do a lot of the things that, could we have hired somebody else to do it? Absolutely. But that would have meant fewer dollars available for the artists. One of the things that I always found fascinating, you would drive in, because I worked at the Cleveland Playhouse building, not for them, for a different theater in their facility. And you'd come in to work at the Cleveland Playhouse, and there'd be 50 or 60 employee cars in the parking lot. And not one of them would be that of an actor. They're the people in marketing and the direct mail people and customer services. And, you know, but those dollars, I mean, if you look at the balance sheet, you know, where's the first big cut they make? Cut back on the number of hours of rehearsal, you know. And so we would always have liked to have paid other people to do these things. We would have liked to have been able to pay our actors more. But our goal was to keep producing, to keep it going. So.
And what about for you? Typical day? Yeah,
it's not too dissimilar. Early in, Neil handled the bookkeeping 99.9% of the time, and the graphics. I was the schlepper and the materials manager, and I would be the person hunting for the props, the bits for the costumes, doing the physical work of where does this go, how do we find that this will work in rehearsal but this won't. I did a lot of set painting at different times. I also did a lot of set construction, but I would manage, stage manage a lot of the shows. There was a time in which we did some children's shows, so I directed those, and then I transitioned to directing main stage shows as well, just to give Neil a break to begin with, and because the schedule would be pretty crazy. I costumed every single show we did all the wigs, did all the minutia detail relating to costume design, prop design. Spent hours on the phone begging for things. I'm very good at begging. I think the hardest prop to find was a medical table for the play Wit. That Akron General Hospital eventually helped out with that. That was a big challenge. But we've had to find some pretty unusual things, which has been, it's kind of fun to look for those things. It's a big challenge. Getting wonderful people to let you use their stuff for rehearsal and performance.
One of the other things that Mary Jo, you know, doesn't say about herself as much is that she is also an amazing kind of ad hoc nurse. We have, you know, when you're in operation for 17 years, you're going to have just about everything that can happen. We've had actors pass out on stage in rehearsal. One night, Mary Jo was watching rehearsal, and
One of our actresses was started behaving very, very strange. She was standing on a platform, pulling at her clothes. I'm like, "Stop! Stop the play! Get down! Get down!" I was screaming bloody murder at her to get her to stop and get off the platform. And finally, I literally caught her as she fell off the platform. We got 911 there, took care of that. Then we had another instance where one of our actors, who's like as reliable as the day is long, never misses a line, never misses his mark, never crosses one foot left if he's supposed to. And he was quite erratic in the rehearsal. And I had to stop the rehearsal. I said, "You just got to cut it out. I'm cutting the rehearsal right now. Let's capture." Yep, he didn't totally black out, which was great. But we've carried a few people off stage. We've gathered audience members as they've keeled over. So we've had a bit of that. We had another actress who had an allergic reaction during dress rehearsal to the lipstick she had. So it's like, I'm not a doctor. This is Benadryl. My best instinct tells me you have an allergic reaction. Take this right now. Take this right now as I'm dialing 911. So, you know, we've had to do that. I've had to costume several pregnant actresses as they've gone from not looking very pregnant, you know, during final rehearsal to, "Oh, the show is very successful. We're extending it 3 weeks, and now you look seriously pregnant." So we've done that a number of times.
The most exciting one, though, was involving an actor, but it was not technically in performance. The performance had ended, and it was the curtain call. And it was, the play Macbeth is referred to as the Scottish play because it's notorious for bringing bad luck, so you can't say the name of the play. And in this case, one of our actors, in making his entrance for the curtain call, misjudged the height of a platform that he was ducking under and caught himself just right at the crown of the head. And fortunately, one of the other actors in the show, one of our longtime company members, his mom was in the audience. And his mom was an emergency room physician. So we put Keith in her car, and she drove him to her emergency room and took care of it. But it was
27 staples in his scalp.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the wonderful thing is he's an extremely well-trained actor, you know, master of fine arts from the Actors Studio. And you know that because when I came backstage, I raced backstage as soon as I knew he was hurt, and he's standing there with one hand holding his scalp on and leaning over so that he doesn't get blood onto his costume.
Yes!
So, now that's a well-trained actor. Either that or a very scary costumer.
Yeah.
One of the two.
You saved lives. You created all of this.
I don't know about that, but.
And so what do you hope that people look back on Actor Summit, people in Akron, Northeast Ohio, look back and what do they think when they think Actor Summit? What is your hope?
I hope that they have a sense of pride in the work that they've shared with us, because we can't work in a vacuum as artists. Being a theater artist is one of the ultimate community endeavors. We could act in a closet, but it would be so boring. We need that audience. We crave the feedback as much as we have the desire to tell you this story. And we hope that they had meaningful experiences, that those plays left them with questions and they would seek out answers to the situations, to the problems presented in the play, and that those questions and the answers might have the teensiest influence on their life.
And also that we were able to do some plays that, as Mary Jo said, speak to an audience both emotionally and intellectually. We've just had some fabulous experiences with plays that had connections with certain communities, whether they were the the science community, the LGBTQ community, whether it was people with disabilities, people with coming out of certain ethnic histories. When you can make that connection, when it's something more than, we refer to it as the contemporary comedy where you get the guaranteed laugh when you play the tape recording of a toilet flushing off stage. It's a guaranteed laugh. It doesn't necessarily enrich anyone's life, you know. And if I had a regret, it would be that we didn't have more people see the best work that our artists produced. That we were creating this opportunity, and you know, I don't know how many tens of thousands of people actually saw us in performance, but I so wish that there were some moments that more people could have experienced, because they were, some of them were pretty spectacular.
Yeah. We've had some great ones, just amazing ones.
All right, tell me one or two of your favorites real quick.
Copenhagen. That left lots of questions in people's minds, the what-ifs, the Einstein, Freud's last session. I tend to like the history and science plays. We did Photograph 51, which was just tremendous response to that one. The Teddy Roosevelt play was a huge, huge hit.
One of the things, we had done a play, we actually did it twice, called My Mother's Lesbian Jewish Wiccan Wedding. And because the second time we did it as during the run of the ninth Gay Games, GG9. And we had people coming in to see the show who basically said, this is the first time I've ever been able to see my life on stage, the kind of relationship that I have with my spouse. And, you know, to create those opportunities, that kind of openness. And also just the friends that we've made among our patrons. One of the great things about season subscriptions is that you sit in the same seat for each show, basically. And that means that the person seated in the seat next to you is going to be next to you for those six shows. And we pointed out to people that, you know, being a season subscriber, you'll see your neighbors in the seats around you more often than you'll see some members of your family. Because I'll guarantee you, I don't see some members of my family six, eight times a year. And so we have folks who have become close friends and go to each other's house for Seder. And it's great when you come in and you see these seasoned subscribers whose only connection, the only way they got together was through the theater, and they greet the people in the next set of chairs with hugs. I mean, you know, it's creating that kind of community. Not easy to do, not easy to sustain, but boy, when it works, it's awfully satisfying.